Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to episode Matt Gilroy of the Cost Per Point Cast. I'm your host, Trevor Shackles. The Sens are in the midst of an insane stretch of games in the second half of the season, and this is the only time they have 3 days off the rest of the way. So while we have these days off, I thought I could bring on my colleague and former guest, Beata Elliott. Sorry, see, I already messed up your name there. It's all good, though. Beata, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on again, despite the late time difference tonight. Appreciate you.
No problem. I was just thinking about it, and I realized that the only time I've been on the Cost Per Point Cast was to be sad about the Erik Karlsson trade. So it's been a while. It's good to be back.
That's true. Yeah, that was... I don't want to say that was a fun time necessarily, but it was an interesting conversation.
Cathartic, you know?
Very, very much so. Yeah, so... Yeah, it has been a while. I guess that would have been, what, September 2018. So simultaneously feels like a long time ago and not a long time ago at all. But now with this season, the trade deadline is obviously less than a month away. And Pierre Dorion has said that this year will hopefully be their last as sellers. I mean, can't guarantee anything. And Ottawa doesn't have nearly as many intriguing trade options this year. But there are some pending UFAs that I want to talk about. So I thought we could kind of go through all of them and talk about whether we want to either move them or keep them. And first on the docket, I think probably the most interesting guy, the guy who's talked about the most, is Nick Paul. Should they try to re-sign Nick Paul pretty much at any cost, or should they deal him?
Definitely somewhere in the middle. It's a really tricky one, honestly, because he's a really important part of the team. He's a guy that I know a lot of people want to have around. But he is very much a bottom six forward, and I think I'd be okay with the Sens, like, overpaying a little bit for what he provides, but not a lot. Like, some of the numbers I've seen floating around, I'm like, good teams do not pay their bottom six forwards, like, $3 million a year. That's, no. Mm-hmm. But, like, nah, maybe if we can go to, like, $2 million, I'd be okay with that. So, it really depends what he's asking for.
For sure, yeah, and I think I agree there. I saw someone today saying something about, you know, $4 million per year for 4 to 5 years, and I think that would be a bit ridiculous. Like, you know, I feel go ahead.
Yeah, no, if you're, like, okay, if you're going to pay one of your, like, bottom six forwards $4 million, do that, like, give that to either, like, Alex Formanton, if you want him in the bottom six, or Connor Brown, or Shane Pinto. Those are three players mm-hmm. that I think could all make up a better third line than anything that you could put, that you could make with Paul, right? Like, they have other options if they want to, like, spend in their bottom six on, like, you know, like, the third line players and stuff. Yeah, I think that, no, I wouldn't give that kind of money to Nick Paul.
Absolutely, and I think it's important to note that, you know, well, first of all, I don't want to come across as slandering the guy because I do really like him. And I think most people want to keep him, you know, just at a reasonable price. But he's never been on pace for 30 points in a full season. I think he was on pace for 29 the past two. He had the exact same point rates. And this year, I think he's around that mark as well. So, you know, this is a guy that's probably best suited for, like, the fourth line. You know, he can certainly play on your third and maybe second a few games here and there. But he's not that offensive, so I think I'm similar to you where, like, okay, maybe $3 million max, but, like, that's quite a lot. I would kind of put that limit personally more around, like, 2.5. I think that'd be, like, kind of a nice middle ground. But I feel like so many people complain about the Colin White contract. I mean, don't you think that people would be complaining
so
about
true.
This one if he was making more than $4
million? Yeah. I feel like if they want to give him $3 million, give him $3 million over, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
So that by the time you need contracts for your, like, guys on ELCs, then you have more room. If you sign him long-term to $3 million, like, what are you doing? Like, a really useful tool, actually, that I was using today because I knew that we were going to talk about this on the podcast, is on Cap Friendly. You can check, like, teams' depth charts. And so if you look at, like, the cup-contending teams and you see, like, Cap Friendly will, like, break down, this is their third, they're their first line, and here's what each guy is making, and their second line, here's what each guy is making. Like, top teams do not pay bottom six forwards more than like $1 million a year.
No.
Like maybe they'll have like one third line guy who's making $4 million and that's it, right? A few exceptions, but like for the most part, it's under $2 million for anyone in the bottom six.
For sure, yeah. And you can't be overpaying these guys. And I am curious to see what he's asking for, because I just feel like even on the open market, he doesn't really, how do I phrase this? Like I don't think he has the case to be asking for, you know, more than $3 million or something. Like, I just don't think he'd be getting that on the open market. Like, maybe if he had some playoff pedigree or something, you know, similar to a guy like Barclay Goodrow, something like that. But I just don't think he has that. So, I mean, it would be pretty disappointing if they do trade him, just because, you know, they're going to be looking for a guy like Paul once they, or if they do trade him. Mm-hmm. I mean, but what do you think they could actually get in return for him if they do end up trading him in the next month?
I feel like he is pretty valuable as like a rental at the price that he, like at the salary that he has right now. I think cup contending teams would go, wow, like that's a really cheap depth player that could really help us on a cup run. I don't think they would re-sign him for, if he's asking for a lot of money. If he's asking for too much money for the Ottawa Senators, I don't think a cup contending team is going to give him that. Right, I feel like a bad team would give him like a lot of money, right?
Yeah,
a good team wouldn't. But I don't know, like, yeah, he might be able to get like a, I don't know, a third round pick, possibly, like maybe a second, but that's stretching it. I don't know, honestly.
For sure, yeah, and I think it all depends on what his sort of imaginary value is, right? Like if you just look at the surface stats, he's probably, like you said, worth a third or something, but you know, maybe he's one of these guys that like Paul Gostad, who ended up getting a first round pick like 10 years ago or whatever it was, just because of this perceived extra value. So who knows? I mean, you know, maybe some team out there is willing to move a decent prospect, in which case it wouldn't be so bad, but certainly, you know, a fan favorite and seems like a very liked guy in the team. So I would be sad to see him go. And I don't know. I can't.
I
assume you're the same.
Yeah, I'd be very sad. And I don't know if any other team values Nick Paul as much as Ottawa does. Like,
yeah.
To me, it seems more likely that the Sens are going to overpay him than like just give him away for nothing. But then again, it's the Sens, so they might do anything. But like, I don't know. It's hard to picture other teams looking at Nick Paul and thinking that he has more value than the Sens think he has, if that makes sense.
I think that's pretty fair. That happens with a lot of depth players that we've had over the years that just sort of go to another team and kind of disappear almost. So yeah, I would not be surprised at all. Now, another guy I want to talk about who is sort of in the similar mold but isn't really talked about very much is Zach Sanford. Are you wanting to re-sign him or trade him?
Honestly, just trade him. Zach Sanford's okay. I'm not sure that he's a good fit on this Senators team. Like, he just seems kind of invisible a lot of the time, and I don't know, maybe this is going into, like, boring hockey cliches, but, like, I don't know, the Sens really pride themselves on being, like, a really hard-working team and stuff, and I don't know, Zach Sanford just doesn't fit that mold from what I've seen, and I don't know, maybe I'm just, like, slandering all these players right now, but, like, he has, like, some offensive skill, but I'm not wowed by him at any point. He doesn't seem to be, like, really giving it all his all every night, like, you know, Tyler Ennis is. Obviously, we'll talk about him later. But, and like, the Sens have so many prospects that are going to be coming up in the next few years. Like, they really, I think the best thing they can do right now is just clear out all of the, like, clutter that they have in their bottom six. And Zach Sanford is one guy that I'm definitely willing to part with there.
For sure. And I think I agree with a lot of that. I think he has been sort of invisible, and I will say he looks better than he did, I guess, in the early going. But yeah, you know, this season, last season were worse than, I guess, a couple seasons ago was when he had, I think he had 16 goals that year. So yeah, I mean, I same thing, like, I am just pretty indifferent to him. I would be fine if they re-signed him for 1 year. I think beyond that, though, it's probably not worth it. And you're probably you're probably getting less than you are for Nick Paul. Like, maybe you get a fourth round pick or something, which, I mean, I guess I would take.
Yeah.
But anyway, another guy that is, I feel like, just on a downward slope is Chris Tierney. You know, he had 48 points in his first season in Ottawa, and he's just slowly, you know, depreciating in value. Can Ottawa even get anything?
Where offense goes to die.
Exactly.
Like, just watching him on the ice is painful sometimes. Like, I don't hate the guy.
For sure.
You know, again, I'm not going to, like, I don't want to come on here and just, like, slander every single guy. But, like, really, I can't really see a future for him with this team. I'm sure that his next contract would be a lot cheaper than what he makes right now. And that was one of my issues with him, is, like, why are we paying Chris Tierney, like, $3.5 million? He's what, our, like, third, fourth highest paid player that's not on IR right now.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there would even be a market for him? Like, do you think any a team would give up any sort of pick for him at the deadline?
Well, because I want to say, like, maybe, because he does, like, he is pretty good defensively from what I understand. Like, at least his stats are decent. Even if he doesn't have a lot of offensive upside, he, you know, has played in lots of different situations in Ottawa. We know very well that he's on the power play these days. maybe some teams would be willing to give something up for him, but then I'm also like, I mean, it's going to have to be a real bad team, because the teams that are up against the cap are not going to take on, I mean, even with a deadline, I know it's like a lower cap hit and stuff, but like $3.5 million is a lot to pay Chris Tierney.
That is true, yeah. I mean, a team that is close to the cap is not really, I'm sure they're going to be looking at much better options. So, and Ottawa's not a team to retain salary very often, so.
Time to play someone in LTIR so you can fit Chris Tierney under the cap.
Go.
Let's go.
Leafs, I mean, they just put Muzzin on, or I don't know if they actually did, but they were rumored to at least. So there you go. There's the Leafs acquisition. now, a guy we mentioned before this is our good pal, hardworking Tyler Ennis. I don't know, he's a tough one for me, but are you wanting to re-sign him or trade him?
I'm kind of indifferent there. Like, I don't think Tyler Ennis is a guy that, like, yes, you absolutely must re-sign him and it's some huge failure if he leaves, right? But I think, like, if you're looking at your roster for next year and there's an open spot for Tyler Ennis, like, I'm certainly happy to keep him on at the league minimum contracts that he has right now. If he's happy to stay for a low cost, he's cheap depth.
For sure. I mean, you know, he was signed on a PTO to begin the season and then had that, you know, signed the actual NHL contract shortly after that. You know, we saw 2 years ago, he was having a really good season in Ottawa. He was like a perfect third line player and they only got a fifth round pick for him. So, you know, 2 years later, I don't really know how much they would get for him anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you say, if they got a spot, I'm kind of similar with Sanford. Like if they sign him for 1 year, I'm totally fine. If they move on from him, I don't think it's too much of a loss. But yeah. I will say, it's really fun to watch him play. He's just a ball of energy out there, and it just seems like he's working hard every single shift.
And he's clearly, like, so well-liked among his teammates and stuff, too. Like, everybody loves this guy. Like, I would really like to see him stay. I just don't think the Sens, I don't think he should be, like, a huge priority, right?
No.
But
no.
It would be nice if he could stick around for another year or two.
Yeah, and, you know, as a man who's 5'8", it's great to have another short king on the team, too. So, okay, two more here. And this is the only defenseman on the list, Josh Brown. What are your thoughts on keeping or...
I mean, you can't teach big. You have to keep him around, right? no, I'm kidding, obviously. Nobody tweet me about that one. No, I think that's the easiest to... Please get rid of him.
Yeah. Yeah. And
can
I...
Can you imagine... I'm sorry, I was thinking about this earlier. Can you imagine if his pairing with Brännström ends up being so good that they keep him along, they keep him around for another year because he's so good at Eric Brännström? Like, this is my fear right now, because they've been really good together, like, weirdly good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now I'm like, oh no, are they going to keep Josh Brown?
you know, yeah, he has actually been a bit better of late, but, you know, you sort of wonder how much of that is playing with Brännström. And yeah, my one worry is that, you know, DJ has this allegiance to him where, you know, he coached him in Windsor, in the OHL. So hopefully they can still kind of see, okay, this guy isn't really that cut out. Like, maybe he's like a seventh, eighth defenseman, but certainly not someone you can rely on, you know, even in third pairing minutes. I don't really want him there. But hopefully they can at least find somebody. Like, I won't deny the fact that they definitely need some size and, like, toughness on the back end. But you can't just have a guy like Brown who that's all he does. Like, you need a guy who can actually move the puck as well, and Brown just certainly isn't that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you have so much size and toughness up front already that, like, I don't know, maybe does that make up for it, right? Like, if you have a bunch of wingers, you got, like, Brady Tkachuk and, you know, even a lot of the other wingers who can really hit, maybe you can kind of, like, lose a bit of that on defense, but I don't know.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
For sure. Yeah. I think sometimes they put too much of an emphasis on toughness and things like that, so... You know what, I bet you he just ends up walking. I can't imagine there being much of a market for him, but who knows, Braden Coburn was traded last year as well. So, and lastly, one of the more intriguing options as well is Anton Forsberg. You know, he's up to a .917 save percentage in 24 games this season. Do you think they want to keep him around, at least for this season, just so Gustafsson can stay in the AHL, or potentially even re-sign him, or... Do you think it'll be a good market for him on the trade market?
It's definitely, like, that's another, like, really kind of interesting one. Because I don't know if there's a clear answer. It's great that he's been playing well, but you also have to keep in mind that Gustafsson is on a one-way contract next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, but then there's also the fact that Matt Murray is constantly injured. So, like, you do kind of need, you know, two other options in net. And, you know, having Forsberg and Gustafsson does help there, but ultimately I think, like, you're probably never going to get higher value for Forsberg, and there are a lot of teams looking for goaltenders, and so I think it would be worth it to get rid of him now, bring up Gustafsson, see what Gustafsson can do before you're, like, you know, like, stuck with him in the NHL next year, right? Because this season you still have the option to kind of move him back and forth between the AHL and the NHL. So I feel like that makes the most sense to me. Like, you just kind of get rid of Forsberg first, and then if Gustafsson sucks, then you have a whole summer to figure out that problem, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good strategy to sort of know what you have going into next season. And I think we have a large enough sample in Forsberg's career to know that he's certainly not a starter. I mean, he has a career .907 save percentage. Like, you know, he's been solid, especially of late. He's been really good. You know, potentially he can be your, like, okay backup or something, but, you know, we've seen this trend with Hammond, Condon, Nielsen, like, all these guys' backups that they re-sign end up just not being good the following year or years. So it'd be nice to see them buck that trend and, you know, maybe not trust Gustafsson, but not put so much faith into a guy who is just having a good, like, 15-game stretch or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, obviously, this trade deadline will be so much different than previous seasons. I mean, in 2019, we had Mark Stone and Matt Duchene. In 2020, we had Pageau. Last season, there was... God, I can't even remember. Who did we have? I guess we had Goodbranson, Coburn.
I don't think there were big ones. Yeah.
No, who would have been the other ones?
Mike Riley, too.
Yeah, Riley. Yeah, so I guess last year was kind of similar to this year, but... You know,
I think it's funny. Oh, I think it's funny that Dorian is talking about it. It's like our last of sellers. Like, oh man, the Chris Tierney sweepstakes for sellers this year. It seems like a weird word to use when, like, most of these pending UFAs we're talking about are all like, will anyone pay even a seventh round pick for this guy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, if they get any sort of, like, second or third round picks, I'll be pretty ecstatic for some of those guys. So, I guess except Nick Paul, I'd be sad to see him go.
But, you know, still something to watch as we head into the deadline. But what's really fascinating about this team is that they were once again horrendous for the first 20 games of the season, going 4-15-1. But, you know, they've been quite respectable since then, going 15-11-4. What do you think are some of the biggest reasons why we've seen that shift? And how should we view this team moving forward?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of factors. To be honest, I do think they deserved a slightly better fate early in the season. Like, they didn't deserve to be in a playoff spot, but there were a lot of games early on where they almost won, and, like, you know, a few bounces could have gone their way and they might have gotten a better result. And I felt like, you know, when they had the COVID outbreak, obviously that didn't help things. And it kind of felt like it just got to a point where they were losing so much that they were so, like, demoralized. And you could just see watching them that it was really getting to their heads. And I feel like maybe if a few other bounces go their way early in the season, it's a different story. But that said, like, they're still definitely playing better by, like, every metric. And I think, like, goaltending is a factor. Playing more young players, especially defensemen, like, having three pairings that can move the puck almost every night. We're now getting to that point with Brännström up in the NHL, right? Like, I think that has made a big difference. And just, like, a lot of young players kind of taking steps forward, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the penalty kill as well. Like, they're 12th in the league now at 80.9%. Mm-hmm. And that's, we haven't seen a above average penalty kill in Ottawa in years. So that is, you know, certainly a large part of that is because of goaltending, but it's just been nice to see, you know, guys like Connor Brown and Formanton just being excellent on the penalty kill, where they can actually create chances, offensive chances on the penalty kill. So that has been nice.
Yeah, and, like, it looks like the penalty kill looks good too. Yeah. Like, I'm not usually, like, usually when the Sens are on the penalty kill, I'm not, like, you know, nervous, right? I'm not waiting for the other team to score. I'm pretty relaxed because they're keeping all the shots to the outside. And yeah, obviously Formanton creating problems. It was really funny in that game against the Wild. Yeah. There were some early penalty kills. I don't know if you watched that whole game, but man, like, the first period, he was creating so many problems on the penalty kill. It was hilarious, right?
I mean,
but, like, that just keeps happening.
Yeah, like, he could have easily had, like, a hat trick in that first period. So, I mean, even the power play, I believe it's below average right now, but just in terms of movement and chances and, like, how much more cohesive they look, you know, obviously they're missing Drake Batherson and Josh Norris. Like, those are two massive pieces, probably two of your best power play guys. But just in terms of their movement compared to previous seasons, like, it looks like they know what they're doing. I will say it's just, like, a lot more fun to watch this team, I guess, over these past, how many games is that? 30 games.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like you said with the power play, I found, like, watching that first unit when everyone was healthy was so much fun, because mm-hmm. it's like, it's all, like, young guys who are going to stick around, and you can just see how well it works, right? With, like, Shabbat at the point, you've got, like, Stutzla and Batherson, like, you know, doing work around the corners and the sides, and then you've got Norris just, like, firing the puck with Brady causing problems in front of the net, right? Like, they all had their role. It was perfectly set up, and there's just been a lot of that, like, a lot of lines finding chemistry, pairings where you're like, oh wait, that could actually be, like, a defense pairing in the future. This was very encouraging to watch, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Lots to look forward to, and even for this season, there's lots to, you know, be excited for. And, you know, while we have those things to be optimistic about, I think if we look at this team next year and in the future, you know, there's certainly some guys that we can rely on, like those guys that you mentioned on that sort of first power play unit, as well as, you know, Formanton and Zub and things like that. But there's certainly lots of other obvious holes. What are some holes that you think they need to plug over the next year or two?
For me, the biggest holes in the lineup are the two wings on the second line, or at least in the top six. I think, like, Formanton and Brown can play in the top six, but I would rather not have both of them on the second line, and I think ideally they're both on the third line. So it would be really nice to have, like, I don't know whether they're, like, looking for new players through trades, right? There are obviously lots of names floating around.
Kevin Fiala.
I know Fiala at Besser.
Yeah.
Even Connor Garland. My mom's a Canucks fan, and she said
he's good.
Be a good fit on the Sens. Yeah, he's pretty good. And it sounds like the Canucks are doing a fire sale, so we might be able to capitalize on that. Who knows? But yeah, like even just getting like one more winger there, and then like maybe you have somebody come up from the minors that really impresses, or ideally, obviously, getting two new wingers. But that to me is the thing that they need to sort out.
Yeah, I certainly agree there. I mean, I had that written down as well. I think you could probably survive with Formanton and Brown in the top six. Like, I think by definition, if you look at their, you know, point totals and stuff like that, they probably are like technically top six guys. But, you know, if you have Tkachuk on that first line, who isn't like, he's a really good player, don't get me wrong, but he's not like a star point per game player. Like, if you don't have these stars, you know, like Kucherov and Point and Stamkos and whatever, you kind of need your second line to be a bit deeper. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally agree. I think if they could get, you know, someone like a Fiala or Besser, I think that's a game changer for them. Another young winger who's like, you know, max 26 years old, hopefully even younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even like that's a decent second line. Like Formanton and Brown on the second line is fine, but if you have Formanton and Brown on your second line, who's on your third line?
Exactly.
Suddenly that's a problem. Yeah. Right, especially if you get rid of Nick Paul, then, you know,
injuries,
you're looking for new bottom six players. And like, I think there are actually a lot of options in the minors, like, you know, Ridley Gregg, Tyler Boucher, Igor Sokolov, like lots of players who might eventually come in, but we don't know for sure where they're going to fit in the lineup and when they're going to be ready for a full-time NHL job. So I think the best thing they can do is like load up that second line, move their second liners down to the third line, and roll with that.
Well, it's always an interesting conversation that I have with people where, you know, I might mention something like we're talking about where, you know, I say like, oh, they need to go and get another solid top six winger. And then people will say like, oh, well, Formanton or Brown and Brown are in the top six or whatever. And it's, you know, to your point, it's never a bad thing to have too many good players, right? Like if Alex Formanton's on your third line, that's great. Like you look at a guy like Alex Killorn on Tampa, he's like, you know, he was forever on their third line. Same with a guy like Yanni Gourde. You know, if those guys are in your third line. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like if you have these solid players who can easily play in the top six, but they're on your third line, I mean, that's a really good sign. You're just going to need, like, championship teams have more than six top six forwards. You know what I mean? Like, well, you're going to need that depth.
Yeah, you need that, especially because there are going to be injuries. Like, there are always going to be injuries in your top six, and you're going to need people to fill in. And yeah, I think people worry way too much about this imaginary problem of, like, what if we have too many good players?
And the horror! Is,
like, A, these problems sort themselves out. Like, this isn't a problem that teams have. Nobody is going, oh no, we have too many good players. B, that's a great problem to have if you do have that problem. And C, like, you can trade players. Good players have good trade value. If it turns out that there's this, like, huge backlog of, you know, oh no, we have way too many top six forwards, like, just trade some of them for other holes in your lineup. It's fine. Don't worry about this, guys.
Absolutely. I mean, just acquire good players. It seems pretty straightforward. Exactly. But now one I wanted to, another hole that I wanted to mention, and I'm curious on your thoughts. I think they really, really need another top four defenseman. I think they're pretty set with Chabot and Zub. I think Sanderson is almost a locked, even though he hasn't played an NHL game. Mm-hmm. I just feel like he's such a sure thing to be in that spot. I think Brännström can certainly be in there. I'd still like to see more, and you know, they'll probably keep him on like the third pairing if Sanderson is playing. But even if Brännström is there, I still think they could really use another right shot D who is solid, and maybe that's JBD or Thompson. I don't know, but I still feel like they really need another established guy on that right side.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm hoping that they continue to kind of rotate JBD and Thompson through the lineup, like they were doing for a while. just to see, because I hope that at least like by next season they'll have one roster spot for like one of them, right? Whether mm-hmm. you're rotating or you're like, no, Thompson's here and JBD's in the minors, right? Like, you know, whichever one it is, like I hope they have one spot locked down. It's maybe also relevant to point out that they do have Holden on the left side and Brandstrom can play his offside.
Yeah.
So potentially you could have like Shabbat Zoob and then like Holden Brandstrom and then, you know, like Sanderson with somebody else on the right side. So I think they have a few options there, but yeah, I agree that that's a hole in the lineup, but I'm also pretty confident that they're going to be able to fill that like with the options that they have internally. Like I wouldn't go out and like look for trades to mm-hmm. fill that spot personally.
Well, and certainly, I mean, if you're looking at the trade market, those kind of right shot D are always insanely expensive.
Yeah.
You know, a guy I think that would work perfectly, who I've mentioned for multiple years, and I think Sean Simpson mentioned this as well, as Eric Chernak from Tampa. I mean, okay. Who knows if Tampa would even want to move him? Like, I don't know why they would necessarily, but someone of that mold I think would be a nice fit for them. But you know, it could cost an arm and a leg, so it might not end up being worth it anyway.
Yeah, and it's kind of like if you're gonna pay a lot for a guy that, like, you know, maybe you have, when you have so many internal options, like why would you spend so much on a guy who like is gonna do what it looks like the other players are going to be able to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious about your thoughts on in goal as well, because I just feel like there's so many wild cards. I think there's certainly potential with, you know, who knows, like if Matt Murray keeps this up, if Gustafsson can kind of bounce back, you know, they have guys like Mads Sogaard and Levi Mäkinen, Kevin Mandelaes, certainly some options back there. Like, do you think that one of those guys at some point in the next few years will be that starting goalie?
I don't know, man. Goalies are so weird. Like, yeah. It feels impossible to predict, right? And, you know, yeah, like Matt Murray, his play has been really encouraging. He, as I mentioned before, is like also injured a lot. So you really do need a solid backup if you're relying on Matt Murray as your starter, I feel. And, you know, Gus has had some pretty good games. Also had some bad ones. He's still pretty young. Like I think he's like 22. So yeah, like I'm hopeful that he'll turn it around, but honestly, I just feel like there's no way to know.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
For sure. It's a fool's errand trying to predict these things with goalies. But, you know, they have those five names, like I mentioned. And hopefully, you just have to hope for the best, I guess. Like you're essentially saying. So,
yeah.
Now for the last section here, I want to talk about some guys who haven't been talked about too much amongst everyone. You know, we all know that Thomas Chabot, Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle, Drake Batherson, Norris, Zub, Formanton, like all these guys, Brown as well, they've all been fantastic this year. But, you know, some tweener prospects like JBD, Thompson, Parker Kelly, Mark Kastelic, and Igor Sokolov, they're trying to establish themselves. Do you have any thoughts on those five guys coming up and playing, you know, some games here and there in the NHL?
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like it's split into two categories. We've got, like, the baby defensemen that we're hoping are going to be, like, top four guys. Mm-hmm. And we've got, like, the bottom six forwards for the most part, right? For the defensemen, I've been really impressed with both of them. I know that, like, it's pretty common to see young defensemen come up and play one game and kind of wow everyone and then just sort of plateau after that. But I have liked what I've seen from both. What I've noticed about, like, JBD and Thompson compared to each other, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I find that Thompson is a much flashier player. Like, I notice him a lot. When he makes big, like, really good defensive moves, you notice it on screen, right? On the ice, and you're like, whoa, Thompson, he just made the coolest move. And when he makes mistakes, it's also, like, you know, kind of dramatic. Whereas JBD is just kind of invisible on the ice, but when you pay close attention to him, he's just quietly making, like, really smart plays. So I think I'm kind of at this point, honestly, leaning a little bit more toward JBD, because I think he's been really solid and his underlying numbers have been really good and all of that. But I've liked Thompson too, and I really hope that they both continue on this trajectory and find full-time spots.
I sure hope so. I mean, I'd certainly agree with the fact about Thompson, where I'd say it's more entertaining to watch him. And his stats don't really back it up. Like, they haven't been too great, but then again, it's hard as a young defenseman. But I have been impressed just with the eye test, like watching his play defensively and like how physically strong he looks, because, you know, I came into the season with the assumption that he was pretty much more of an offensive defenseman, which, as you mentioned, he's shown great flashes of that, and, you know, he's putting up good points in the AHL as well. So, yeah, I guess it sort of depends, like, what you prefer as a hockey fan, as a hockey coach, whatever. If you prefer a guy that you don't notice very much, like JBD, or if you prefer a flashy guy like Thompson. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to kind of follow them over the next couple seasons, because I don't expect both of them to be full-time NHL players, just based on the odds, like, it'd be unlikely. But, you know, I think there's a decent chance that at least one of them can be a constant in the lineup, which is exciting. So, now, what about the other three with Kelly, Kastelic, and Sokolov?
Yeah, Kelly and Kastelic, I honestly don't notice Kastelic that much. When I do notice him, usually, you know, he's making good plays. I'm happy with it. Kelly, I think, is a great fourth liner. Like, just a guy that, like, he's great in small doses. I don't expect him to be, you know, a huge point producer or anything. But he's really, really good in that role. And I would certainly be happy to keep him in that role moving forward. Sokolov, I haven't been, like, overly impressed with his play in the NHL. I think it's going to take a little bit more time, but I'm really hoping, obviously, that he does pan out eventually, because he's been pretty good in the minors and obviously a guy that's very easy to root for.
Absolutely. With Sokolov, I mean, you know, he's been not like astronomically better this season, but definitely better than last year. He has 31 points in 37 games in the AHL. But yeah, he has been a bit invisible in Ottawa, and
he's also been playing on the fourth line, though, so yeah, it's like kind of hard to tell, right?
Exactly.
Like, is it because he's playing there, or like, if you put him next to Tiffany Stutzler, would he suddenly start scoring goals?
Right.
Who knows, right?
Yeah. But he's a guy that we knew he was pretty raw when they drafted him, even as a 20-year-old. You know, this is a guy who's had to work so much on his skating, and it has improved, but I still think it needs, you know, that continuous work. And he is a guy that isn't going to quit on making the NHL. So I'm confident that he can at least be an NHL player. Who knows if he's like a top six guy or something, but I think the vibes of the team go soaring through the roof if he ends up, you know, being a constant.
They're already through the roof, right? Like, man, how much higher can they go?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a perfect segue to my final question here, Beata, which is just, yeah, how are the vibes with this team? How can you describe it?
They're so good. This team is so much fun. Like, every single day, like, I go on Twitter and the official Senators account is tweeting out pictures of these guys just hugging each other in practice. And it always, like, you know, always makes my day. You know, the post-game videos. Have you noticed that they, like, with the helmet videos,
oh,
they always play Gimme, Gimme, Gimme by ABBA as they're, like, putting on the helmet.
Yeah.
And it makes me so happy. Like, no, it's just everything about it. Like, I am obsessed with this team. They're so they're obviously such good friends.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're a content machine. It's just they do seem like they really love each other, and that's awesome. And like, that is such a good silver lining in a season that is, it's not like a lost season or something, but like, you know, it's another season without the playoffs and just sort of wondering what's going to happen next. And when you can just sort of enjoy these small little moments, it's just so, it just makes being an NHL fan that much better.
Mm-hmm. I swear, if the national media paid more attention to the Sens, or if they had been better in the last few years, the Sens would be, like, the number one team on Hockey Tumblr and, like, AO3 and stuff. Like, the fanfic writers would eat this up, and I give it maximum 2 years before they finally catch on. Like, these are going to be the next Avalanche where everyone, like, you know, casual, like, get ready, guys. We're about to have so many new fans.
I mean,
who, like,
I saw...
did not know who this team was a few years ago.
I saw that you've retweeted a few times, like, some... what are they called, like, hype videos, I guess, of, like, I think there was one recently.
Oh, the just fan cams.
That, yeah, like, that one was really good. I love that.
I know. The fan cam makers are starting to catch on.
Yeah, it's
cool.
Awesome.
We've got a few in our community. It's great.
For sure. Well, that'll do it for today, but is there anything you'd like to plug for the listeners, Beata?
Well, if you're subscribed to this podcast, you will at some point get my podcast, actually.
Yes.
You're probably, like, so annoyed with me already, and, you know, this was obviously a very different vibe from my usual podcast, but yeah, if you would like to hear me talk about very different things, you can listen to This Amelnik in Life, which is also on the Silver 7 Podcast Network. We're kind of on hiatus at the moment. We'll be back for next season, probably. And obviously you can follow me on Twitter at cbeatae, so cbeatae. And read my writing at Silver 7 Sens.
All right, so you heard her. Go follow her there. Thanks again for coming on, Beata. It's always fun.
It was a good time. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. As I wrap it up, reminder that you can find the Cost Per Point cast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. And if you really enjoy it, you can rate and review the podcast on those platforms as well. You can follow me on Twitter at ShaqTS, read my articles at Silver 7 Sens, and also follow my YouTube channel called The Hockey Shaq. If you want to submit a listener question for an upcoming episode, send me a message at cppointcast on Twitter, where you'll get any updates about the show. Let's get ready for the trade deadline. Adios.